Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage, that's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on sexually transmitted diseases right after this. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party, limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it is regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about it all is that you have no input into, or say-so over, the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of it, and if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important and the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It is more binding and it is more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably know a whole lot less about your marriage contract than you do about your military obligation or your house payments. And 67% of all marriages ultimately end up in divorce. But whether you're a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against any breach of this marriage contract. And that's why you should know and understand the terms and the conditions of your marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract yourself instead of letting the state write it for you. Now, whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD set and let me share some vital information with you about the law and this marriage contract. Just call direct 417-273-4967 to ask for your free copy of the General Law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. And if you're online, you can order it through the web. Just go to the website, georgegordon.org. It's an easy one to remember, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, the following information is taken from the book Why True Love Waits by Josh McDowell, published by Tyndall House Publishers, Wheaton, Illinois, in 2002. Again, that's Why True Love Waits by Josh McDowell, published by Tyndall House Publishers, Wheaton, Illinois. Here are the most common sexually transmitted diseases. Chlamydia, about 4 million new cases every year. Trichomoniasis, I guess that's pronounced T-R-I-C-H-O-M-O-N-I-A-S-I-S, if I can pronounce that. Trichomoniasis, 3 million a year. PID, I don't know what that stands for, but it's a sexually transmitted disease called PID, about 1 million a year. Gonorrhea, 800,000. HPV, also known as genital warts, about 1 million a year. Genital herpes, 500,000. Syphilis, 101,000. And HIV/AIDS, about 80,000. Now, 5 out of the 10 common reportable infectious diseases in the United States are sexually transmitted diseases. And the Center for Disease Control indicated that chlamydia is the most common reportable infectious disease in the United States. Gonorrhea ranked second, and AIDS ranked third. So the three top ranking communicable diseases are sexually transmitted diseases: chlamydia, gonorrhea, and AIDS. Now, syphilis and hepatitis B were also included in the top 10. These five STDs, as they're called, accounted for 87% of all cases of infections caused by the top 10 infectious diseases found in this country. So let me repeat that. Of the top 10 infectious diseases, five of them account for 87% of all of the infectious diseases in the country, and they're sexually transmitted diseases. Only 13% of infectious diseases are things like measles, mumps, and whooping cough. 87% are sexually transmitted diseases. Quite a story, wouldn't you say? Now, 50% of the cases of chlamydia reported by the CDC were teenagers. So if you take the number of chlamydia sexually transmitted diseases communicated to others in the United States, half are in teenagers. Gonorrhea was the most commonly reported infectious disease among people 15 to 24 years old. The more common diseases of herpes and HPV are not included in the list because they're not designated as reportable by the CDC. Now, at least one person in four will contract a sexually transmitted disease at some point in his or her life. So here in America, 25% of us, one in four, is going to contract a sexually transmitted disease at some point in his life. As many as 56 million American adults and teenagers are infected with an incurable STD, and at least 24 million people are infected with human HPV, or genital warts, and as many as 1 million new infections occur each year. HPV is associated with cervical and other genital and anal cancers. Let me interject here that while we Americans are, we kind of pride ourselves on our sexual advancements in the, well, how would we want to word that? Our liberal approach to sex in America. We're liberated now. We're liberated from these religious, archaic, old thou shalt nots, like thou shalt not commit adultery. It would seem like to me that being constrained by a law that says thou shalt not commit adultery, if it could lessen or eliminate most of these sexually transmitted diseases, would seem like an intelligent law, like thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not steal. Even the secular governments maintain those restrictions upon the general population for the benefit of everybody, don't they? I find it hard to believe that thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not kill or are in some way inhibiting the freedom of expression of Americans to come and go or do or live their lives the way they want to. Do you? Now, 60% of adolescent mothers giving birth for the first time have their delivery paid for by public funds. Did you get that? 60% of these adolescent mothers giving birth for the first time are having that first time birth paid for by public funds. And while the dangers of HIV/AIDS are becoming more well known, there are other dangers involved with less commonly known STDs. For example, the human herpes virus type 8 is associated with Kaposi's sarcoma, one of the most aggressive and dangerous human cancers, and may eventually be found to cause it. Some studies are discovering that this particular virus is present in the semen of many men. Now, it costs the federal and state governments an average of $100,000 in medical and welfare costs for every single teenage mother who has a child. So taxpayers spend about $2,831 a year per teen mother. Adolescent childbearing itself costs the taxpayers $6.9 billion a year, and the higher public assistance benefits, such as welfare and food stamps combined, caused by these adolescent childbearing costs to the taxpayers an additional $2.2 billion. These increased medical care expenses cost an additional $1.5 billion, and the combined cost of adolescent childbearing and other disadvantages faced by adolescent mothers is another $13 to $19 billion a year. For example, it costs U.S. taxpayers about $1 billion a year to build and maintain prisons for the criminal sons of adolescent mothers. Women with a history of involuntary sexual intercourse are more likely to have voluntary intercourse at an earlier age. And in 1991, 3.1 children were abused or neglected, and 970,000 were born into poverty. Intake surveys in detention centers around the country show that between 50% to 70% of girls in custody have experienced some form of sexual abuse. Surveys of young female offenders show a background of abuse in 50% to 70% of the cases. And in 1994, there were 140,000 cases of child sexual abuse, which was up 15% from 1990. And television has a part to play in all of this. Americans spend about one-third of their free time, that is more than the next 10 most popular leisure activities combined. Let me repeat that. Americans spend about one-third of their free time watching television. That's more than the next 10 most popular leisure activities combined. The average teenager spends more time in front of the television set than on any other activity besides or excepting sleep. Television viewing increases in preteen years and it declines after age 12. The average teen spends about 23 hours a week watching television, with the heaviest viewers coming from low and income households. African American households watch 50% more television than other groups in the U.S. Latino teenagers watch more than 30 hours a week, so that by age 18, a teenager will have seen 350,000 commercials, 100,000 of which will be advertisements for beer. So what is it that we're watching? Well, prime time television contains roughly 3 sexual acts per hour, including deep kissing and petting. Only 1 of every 6 of these acts of intercourse on TV is between married couples. So when an act of intercourse is portrayed on television, only 1 out of 6 occurs between married couples. The other 5 are between unmarried people on the TV show. In daytime serials favored among teenagers, there are more than 3 sexual acts per hour. And non-marital intercourse is portrayed twice as often as marital intercourse. Stand by for more right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. We're reviewing a book entitled, let's see if I can find the title here again, Why True Love Waits by Josh McDowell, published by Tyndall House Publishers in Wheaton, Illinois, 2002. I simply took a look here at page 34. I wanted to give you an idea. Josh McDowell puts out a series of videotapes on abstinence in sexual relations until marriage. It's a wild new concept. We used to practice that here in the United States 50 years ago. It's pretty passé today. In fact, it's more common, I believe, that teenagers, by the time they're 18 years old, about 90% of them have had sexual relations, and they're not married yet. So sexual relations outside of marriage is the norm. It's not uncommon at all. Waiting until you're married to experience sexual relations is unusual and abnormal in America today. And in the book, America to Pray or Not to Pray, which is published by David Barton. And David Barton, you can get this book at Wall Builder Press, P.O. Box 397, Aledo, Texas, 76008. Let me give you that one again. Wall Builder Press, P.O. Box 397, Aledo, A-L-E-D-O, Texas, 76008. Has quite a little story here in Chapter 2. I thought I'd share that with you, to show you what the costs are in both dollars and the human misery that is generated by our public school system and sex education in public school. Now, if you think that all of this premarital sex is good for America, well, then we've arrived. If you think maybe it's not so good, listen to this. George Washington, in his farewell address, which is perhaps the single most significant political speech that has ever been delivered by a United States president, made this observation when he warned our nation. He said, quote, "And let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality may be maintained without religion. Whatever may be conceded to the influence of refined education on minds, both reason and experience forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principles." Unquote. Now, Washington's statement was not a radical new teaching. It was the articulation of a fundamental and commonly held belief of our founding fathers. Not merely reason, but experience had proven that morality could not be maintained if it was separated from religious principles. This was also the unquestioned and unalterable stand in our U.S. Supreme Court rulings for more than 170 years until the court arbitrarily rejected those standards back in 1962. So completely have religious principles been expunged from education that in 1981 a court ruled on a legal challenge against teaching premarital sexual abstinence to students in public schools. Now listen to the excerpts from that court's decision. It said, quote, "The harm of premarital sexual relations are fundamental elements of religious doctrine, and it is a fundamental tenet of many religions that premarital sex is wrong. In short, the program that is teaching premarital sexual abstinence has the primary effect of advancing religion. This alone would force the court to declare the law constitutionally infirm. The inescapable conclusion is that federal funds have been used to teach matters inherently tied to religion." That's cited from Kendrick versus Bowen. So if you were to teach sexual abstinence in public school, you'd be shot down because sexual abstinence is the teaching of the Bible and of many religious ideologies. However, teaching homosexuality, teaching sexual promiscuity, which is not religious, which is inherently pagan, which is inherently secular. Well, that's okay. We can teach that in public school. Which tells me a story. Why would you want to send your child to an institution that's going to teach sexual perversity? Well, although this case was eventually modified by the Supreme Court in 1988, the fact that it even reached the Supreme Court, and that it took 7 years to reach a partial resolution, shows the extent to which basic moral values here in the United States have been totally rejected under this new interpretation of separation of church and state. Another example. In 1988, California was considering adopting legislation on sex education for public schools, requiring that, quote, "Course material and instruction shall stress that monogamous heterosexual intercourse, that means one man and one woman within marriage, is a traditional American value," unquote. Now, the senator who was promoting the bill received a letter of protest from the American Civil Liberties Union, dated April the 18th, 1988, and the ACLU's position said, quote, "It is our position that monogamous heterosexual intercourse within marriage is a, or as a, traditional American value is an unconstitutional establishment of a religious doctrine in public schools. There are various religions which hold contrary beliefs with respect to marriage and monogamy. So we believe this bill violates the First Amendment." Well, I'm sure that's probably true. I don't know which religions are opposed to monogamous sexual relations or morality, but I'm sure there are some. So if you promote a heathen, pagan, religious ideology of sexual promiscuity, that's acceptable, so says the ACLU in public school, but if you were to teach boys and girls that waiting until you're married, or thou shalt not commit adultery, is constitutionally infirm because it promotes religion, I thought that it promoted common sense, based upon the numbers that I just gave you here concerning sexual promiscuity and premarital teenage pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases. Seems like to me just common sense would come into play. I've never heard anyone say, "Thou shalt not kill," advances some religious agenda. Why doesn't the ACLU come out on behalf of mass murderers and say, "The teaching of thou shalt do no murder or thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, advances religion because it's a part of the Ten Commandments in the Bible, just like thou shalt not commit adultery. One thing is absolutely certain. The argument advanced by the ACLU against sexual promiscuity and against monogamy being taught in our public schools, it would seem like to me that it's pick and choose which law you want to practice and which law you want to violate, doesn't it? So if we can teach thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not kill, why can't we teach thou shalt not commit adultery and protect yourself from being arrested or jailed for murdering people or being punished for theft, or the natural punishment which comes from sexually transmitted diseases from premarital sexual activity? Now, students across the nation are being provided with materials in their sex education classes from groups like Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood materials contain photographs, illustrations, and graphics encouraging and demonstrating premarital sexual relations for adolescents. Now, consider some of these mild excerpts that come from the books and materials furnished by Planned Parenthood and similar groups recommended for adolescents from ages 13 through 18 in your public school sex education classes. The first one here, entitled Boys and Sex, says, "More and more people are coming to understand that having sex is a joyful and enriching experience at any age," cited from page 2. "Playing with girls sexually before adolescence increases the chances for a satisfactory sex life when a boy grows up," page 38. "And premarital intercourse does have its definite values as a training ground for marriage. Boys and girls who start having intercourse when they're adolescents will find that it's a big help. It's like taking a car out on a test run before you buy it." Now, that's what we're being taught. That's what we're teaching our teenage children in our public schools. Now, two-thirds, that 67% of marriages end in divorce. And yet, we're being told here in this Planned Parenthood book that premarital intercourse does have its definite values as a training ground for marriage. I think they're right. I think it has a training ground for divorce, because in 1900, the divorce rate in the United States was 8 divorces per 100,000 marriages. Today, it's 2 divorces out of every 3 marriages, two-thirds end in divorce. So if we're trying to train our young people to prepare for divorce, I think that we have accomplished a great deal. If we're training our young people to be whores, sodomites, prostitutes, and we're teaching them how to get sexually transmitted diseases and spread them among their peers, I think that we have become great successes here in America. But is that really what we want to do? Do you really believe that sexually transmitted diseases is the end game that we really want to achieve? I haven't heard anybody tell me, gee, I can't wait until I get AIDS. Or, gosh, I won't be truly educated until I've had a dose of clap, gonorrhea, syphilis, or genital herpes. Have you? No, sir. People who get these diseases rush off to the doctors and pay money to be cured of these diseases, don't they? And don't they go down to Mercy Medical Center where they can get forgiveness of sin? Where they dispense sulfa drugs and penicillin and other antibiotics to cure the diseases? Well, if the diseases are so good, why in the world would we want to be cured from AIDS, herpes, and VD? Stand by for more right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's obvious that something is very wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, our public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple time-tested laws, we now see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers, you know, guys like George Washington, practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. Of course, that was a long time ago, before they knew or understood the separation of church and state. Now, there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 articulable benefits that you receive for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, common law, or natural law, or karma, or something else, it's automatic, and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now to order yours. The number's 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, girls are also included in this sexual revolution. After all, they're the ones that bear the brunt of the premarital sexual activity. They're the ones that have the babies, remember? Now, in the book produced by and given to the public schools by Planned Parenthood, in the chapter on girls and sex, it tells us that girls understand now that they are far more likely to make good social and sexual adjustments to life if they learn to be warm, open, responsive, and sexually unafraid. They're learning to be sexual partners of men. That's on page 10 and 11. Well, I understand that, girls. It's necessary for all whores and prostitutes to be good sexual adjustments to life if you're warm, open, responsive, and sexually unafraid. After all of Flo's girls have to have those characteristics. But my question is, do we really want to train our young girls in America to be whores and prostitutes? Is that really necessary for a healthy, successful, and vibrant society? They go on to tell us that everyone is agreed that teenage sex should be a learning experience. We learned that on page 15. Notice it says everyone's agreed. I want a dissent. Out of 300 million people in America, there's one dissenting voice, George Gordon. I do not agree. While most people probably agree, there's one lone dissenting voice, and I want to be recorded. They go on to say that sex play with boys can be exciting, pleasurable, and even worthwhile if it will help later sexual adjustment. I guess I could go along with that. If it would help later sexual adjustment. But does it? Excuse me. Do you believe that 67% divorce rate in the United States fulfills the later sexual adjustment? Do you believe that 5 out of 10 common reportable infectious diseases in the United States are sexually transmitted diseases, and that sexual experience prior to marriage is the best way to avoid these diseases, or is it the best way to contract one of these diseases? How does that help your sexual adjustment to come down with a dose of syphilis or clap? Could you explain that to me? Now, they go on to say that you've changed the combination. There are only two basic kinds of sex: sex with victims and sex without victims. So they instruct us that sex with victims is always wrong. Sex without victims is always right. One way to avoid having victims is, of course, to have sexual relations only with your friends. Or one way to avoid having victims is, of course, to have sexual relationship only with your friends. Well, excuse me, even if we follow that advice and we have sexual relationships only with our friends, does that prevent sexually transmitted diseases? Now remember, 25% of us, one person out of every four, and I want a dissent from that statistic. See, I don't want to get one of these sexually transmitted diseases. So I avoid adultery like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. A guy once said to me, "Gordon, you are a homophobic." He was right. I am absolutely terrified of homophobia. I am a homophobic. I'm terrified of sodomites and queers and people who have sexually transmitted diseases. I think that was God's intention. I think that God deliberately created sexually transmitted diseases during the creation week to terrify all of us into compliance with "Thou shalt not commit adultery." And with George Gordon, he succeeded beyond his wildest expectations. However, he has totally failed with the majority of Americans. He succeeded with me, but he failed with you. Now they go on to talk about the great orgasm robbery. There has been a great orgasm robbery in America. And they go on to tell us that sex is fun and joyful, and it comes in all types and styles, all of which are okay. Do what gives pleasure and enjoy what gives pleasure and ask for what gives pleasure. Don't rob yourself of joy by focusing on old-fashioned ideas about what's normal or nice. Well, I think the old-fashioned idea of "thou shalt not commit adultery" was a pretty good piece of advice. To my knowledge, and I'm an old man now, I've lived successfully now for 65 years. I'm old enough for Social Security. I don't draw it, of course, but I'm old enough for it. Now, I've lived my life, and so far, I have avoided sexually transmitted diseases by avoiding adultery, by avoiding this very thing of sex is fun and sex is joyful. I made that same observation, but I made it with my wife. And it comes in all types and styles. Boy, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. And I'm not going to find out either. This all kinds of types and styles, I guess, includes sodomy, doesn't it? Well, I missed out. I have suffered under the great orgasm robbery. I have been robbed of the sexual pleasure of homosexual sex. And I want to assure you that I did it of my own free will. I avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. so far it's paid off pretty well. I'm one of the 75% that has or does not get or has not had one of these STDs. And I think that what's normal or nice under thou shalt not commit adultery has paid off for me and for my wife and for my family and my children. What I want for some of you to do is to write me a letter and explain to me how a sexually transmitted disease enhanced your sexual relationship with your friends. Write me a letter and tell me how your sexually transmitted disease enhanced your sexual relationships with your friends. And I'd especially like to hear from some of you teenage mothers, and write me a letter and tell me how your teenage pregnancy at age 14, 15, or 16 has advanced your sexual relationships with your friends. Tell me how you've benefited from that. Explain to me how that works, would you? Now, the effect that these school sex education curriculums have had on the nation since the rejection of religious principles is very apparent. By prohibiting student access to religious principles, the court has prohibited student access to the principles which produce morality. So let me pause right there at that moment in time in our book. The sex education that's being promoted in our public schools is not education, it's indoctrination. Indoctrination. The students are not being allowed to see both sides of the coin. They get the information from Planned Parenthood and gay men with small boys. What do they call that? They got a name for that. It's the North American something or other of gay men with small boys. If you haven't had sex by 8, it's too late, is one of their slogans. I didn't have sex by 8. I guess it's too late for me, isn't it? Now, did you get this? The effect that these school sex ed curriculums have had on the nation since the rejection of religious principles is apparent. By prohibiting student access to religious principles, the court has prohibited student access to the principles which produce morality. Don't you think that education should include exposing these children to morality so that they can make a choice? I mean, it's a wild new concept, but I mean, let's think about it in pragmatic terms. You show them on the one hand AIDS, herpes, VD, sexually transmitted diseases, and a new wild concept called morality, sexual abstinence until marriage. You don't have to tell them it comes from the Baptists or the Catholics, Protestants or Jews. Just tell them it's a wild new concept. And then measure that up with the sexually transmitted diseases and show them that chlamydia affects 4 million people a year and gonorrhea 800,000 and genital herpes 500,000 and HIV AIDS 80,000 and so on. Go ahead and tell them so that they can see that there is a choice to be made here. It's a wild new concept. Let these people choose for themselves. But no, the courts and the public schools and the Planned Parenthood and the gay rights activists, they say, no, no, God forbid that these people should have a choice between morality and immorality. Let us teach them immorality. Let us teach them free sex. But let us not broach the subject of morality so that there will be no choice for them to make, so that they will always be subject to the penalties of the law that says thou shalt not commit adultery. I say that's wrong, boys and girls, and common sense ought to tell us that. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in both the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the website georgegordon.org. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Why True Love Waits by Josh McDowell, published by Tyndall House Publishers, Wheaton, Illinois, 2002. We're talking about sexually transmitted diseases. Back about 1960, there was a great hue and cry all over America concerning premarital pregnancy. It was alleged that because we did not have sexual education or sex education in our public schools, like driver's education, that we were turning out a whole generation of sexual misfits. What nobody ever considered at the time, about 1960, is how did our society function from 1787 to 1960 without sex education in public schools? Indeed, how did our society survive at all without public schools? Remember, public schools are not a part and parcel of the American way of life, our Constitution or Bill of Rights. That was grafted on by the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Remember, free education for all children in public schools is not a part and parcel of our Constitution or Bill of Rights. That comes from the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. Not only didn't we have sex education in our public schools, we didn't even have public schools for the first 130 years. Well, at any rate, the birth rates for unwed teenage girls age 15 to 19 from 1951 to 1963 hovered around 15 per 1,000 unwed girls. The birth rates per 1,000 unwed girls. Now, that's girls that are not married. The birth rate per 1,000 was about 15. Then, about 1960, we introduced sex education in some of the public schools, and then we banned religious principles from those same public schools in 1962. So, looking at the graph from 1962 to 1987, the birth rate among unmarried teenage girls, 15 to 19 years old, went up to 35 per 1,000. So it went up from 15 to 35 per 1,000, more than doubled in 20 years. Obviously, sex education and the religious principles separated from our students in our public schools did absolutely nothing to reduce the problem, which was unwed mothers. But rather, if it did anything, it doubled it. Let's take a look at pregnancies to unwed girls under 15 years of age. Under 15. Back in 1955, it was about 4 per 1,000. Now remember, that's part and parcel with this sex education in our public schools. So under the age of 15, if you had 1,000 unmarried girls, you'd have 4 that would turn up pregnant. Now, after 1963, the number went up to 10. And if you take out the reported abortions, it was up to 25. So today, we have unwed mothers under the age of 15 at the rate of 2.5 times what it was back in the 1950s. But it would be nearly 27, above 25, if we subtracted out the abortions. So what we're doing to solve the problem today of unwed mothers under the age of 15 is to treat it with abortion. Would one of you young mothers out there send me a letter, you young unwed mothers, send me a letter and tell me how your abortion advanced your sexual responsiveness among your friends. Could you do that for me? So I can put it on the air and tell all of our listeners out there how unwed mothers having abortions advances your sexual maturity. Then we have pregnancies to unwed girls 15 to 19 years of age. If you take out the reported abortions, now get this, it goes up to 700. That's right. You see, back in the 1950s, we had 15 girls getting pregnant, and they had live births. Well, today, it's moved up to 250. Got that? 250 have live births, but it would be 700 actually get pregnant, but they treat it with abortion. So here are you parents out there sending your children to public school, and your girls are having abortions and you don't even know it. They're getting pregnant, having abortions, and nobody's ever reporting that to mom and dad. I'm taking these statistics now from the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, reported in the book America to Pray or Not to Pray, and I'm just looking at page 32. That's a 600% increase in 20 years. So we haven't solved the problem of teenage pregnancy. What we've done is we've transferred the problem to the operating room or to the abortion clinic. And so now your daughters are out getting pregnant and having abortions. Getting pregnant and having abortions. Do you really think that's good? In the process, they're also getting sexually transmitted diseases. So the premarital pregnancies and the teenage sexually transmitted diseases are the penalties that we're paying. Penalties that we pay because we decided that we don't want the Bible and morality in our public schools. I solved that problem. I took my children out of the public school. See, I wanted to teach my children both sides of the issue. I've taught my children about sexual immorality, gonorrhea, syphilis, sexually transmitted diseases. I've got a 16-year-old girl right here at home today, and I tell her very plainly, I say, you know, it's a choice that you have to make, sweetheart. So when you go out to the youth group activities, and when you have an opportunity to have sexual relations with some pimply-faced teenage punk kid, remember that when you get pregnant, that pimply-faced punk will be nowhere to be found, but you will be. And she's made a choice. I mean, after all, she's 16 years old. I'm not going to follow her around or buckle on a chastity belt. I mean, life is life, isn't it? But the difference is between my teenage daughter and most teenage girls is that my daughter is equipped. She's educated. She knows that there's a choice for her to make. And that when she gets pregnant, that the boy who gets her pregnant will be nowhere to be found. But she will be. So if you want to take the heat by yourself, sweetheart, the choice is yours. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. She's made a choice so far. She's stayed away from those teenage boys. In fact, she is waiting to have her first kiss. She's 16 years old, never been kissed, and she's not going to be kissed until she's kissed by her husband at the altar when she's married. I know. It's a wild new concept. Wild. Off the wall. Can you tell me what kissing is all about and what it's for? Isn't it for the purposes of sexual arousal? I mean, I just want to lay it out like it is, boys and girls. Now, why do 16-year-old girls need to be sexually aroused in the back of a movie? Unless they're preparing for sexual relations. Why do 16-year-old girls and boys need to be preparing for sexual relations unless they're preparing for marriage? And isn't sexual relations the precursor to pregnancy and reproduction? And why do we want to be spreading sexuality and reproduction among 16-year-old girls? Now, you know, I'm a cattleman, and I'm very careful to keep my heifers away from the bulls until they're old enough to have calves. Once in a while, we'll have one that gets loose, jumps the fence, and gets bred. I've never seen a heifer yet bred before 2 years that it turned out good for. And I can't imagine why we'd have a 16-year-old heifer getting bred by a pimply-faced teenage punk that's going to turn out any better than a Jersey cow. Can you? Now, if as cattlemen we're smart enough to breed our cattle at the right time of age in their lives, don't you think that we humans, being able to think and all of those good things, ought to protect our teenage daughters and our teenage sons from premarital pregnancies? I protect my cattle from unwanted pregnancies. Don't you think we ought to educate our children in the same way? Now, since the court ordered removal of religious principles back in 1962, the United States has the highest incidence of teenage motherhood of any Western country. Every year, 1 million adolescent girls become pregnant. Of those who give birth, half are not yet 18. Now, notice, of those who give birth, most of them have abortions. 80% of pregnant teenage girls are unmarried. The birth rate for unmarried teens rose an additional 14% from 1980 to 85, following an increase of 18% during the 1970s, followed by other increases in the 1990s, and today one teenage girl out of every 10 that attends your public schools is pregnant. 10%. Instead of 15 per thousand, it's now 10%. I say if we want more and more teenage pregnancies and more sexually transmitted diseases, we need more and more sex education at earlier and earlier ages. But if, on the other hand, sexually transmitted diseases and teenage pregnancy is something that you don't want, the best advice that you can receive is take your child out of the environment. Take them out of the public school. I mean, after all, we take our heifers out of the pastures, away from the bulls. It's a wild new concept, something for you to consider. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about The Law Hour and The Law School, please go to the website georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal. It says my time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.